changes that the Lord intends to make in Israel. And one of the great joys of my life in my middle ages was to still be able to go over there and look at these things. Most of them I got from geological survey charts that were printed in Tel Aviv or in the Geological Survey Center in Jerusalem. And so I could have taken those and presented those and correlated it with the Bible, but I wanted to go and see them for myself. I wanted to see exactly what they looked like and if they were precisely where they said they were. Now, of course, you're looking at the Jordan Valley here that extends all the way from down here, way down here at the Gulf of Eden, all the way up to the Gulf of Aqaba, and then it goes all the way up to the southern tip of the Dead Sea. Here's the Dead Sea, the Jordan River, the Sea of Galilee, and way on up here is Mount Hermon. Now, there is to be a tremendous earthquake in this valley. The first great earthquake in this valley will occur on the opening of the sixth seal. It's the great earthquake in Revelation 6:12. That begins the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. At the close of the tribulation period, 3.5 years later, there is to be an even greater earthquake, the greatest that has occurred since men were upon the earth, in this same valley. Now, there will be earthquake after earthquake after earthquake between those two, from severe to light to moderate, one right after another. And during the course of this time, a lot of things are going to happen from the beginning of the tribulation period in this first earthquake in the sixth seal, to the last earthquake on the pouring out of the last vial of God's wrath. You're going to have the Mount of Olives parted, which we've already covered. You're going to have the Jordan River Valley finally ripped open completely in a raging flood basalt plain that looks like a trough filled with blood for 1,600 furlongs, 185 miles. And what we're going to talk about now is in association with all this. And it probably happens in degrees. Probably some of it happens on the first earthquake, some during the earthquakes in between, and perhaps some on the very last earthquake. But this is the line from Geba, which set here, and Rimmon, which set here, and it goes through the city of Jerusalem. It's a normal fault. It's a fault in itself that does not go all the way down to the underground liquid lakes of rock called magma. So you're not going to have volcanic eruptions along this line. You're not going to have liquid rock coming up from underneath the earth. You're just going to have a geological transformation that everything on this side of the line will fall down slightly, and everything on the backside will lift up. This is the city of Jerusalem. All this back here is the Judean watershed, where water falls down from the sky and goes down through the limestone layers and feeds into springs that break out along this line. So we're going to take a look at what happens when this is lifted up and at what God has done in a lot of other places. Give you a little broader perspective. Right up here is Geba. Here's the city of Jerusalem. Right here is the Temple Mount. Here's where this fault runs. It goes right in behind the Temple Mount. This section of the city will be lifted up. This section will fall. It goes all the way down here to a place called Rimmon. So we're going to be looking along this fault line, and we're going to be looking at some other areas of the world that have similar fault lines and what has happened along those fault lines in the past. This is the basic geological development of Palestine. Comes from Hebrew University in Jerusalem, out of the Ramat Valley Bible Atlas. These are the names of the different kinds of layers of rock over there. Senonian rock, Turonian rock, Cenomanian rock, and Nubian sandstone. And this is the way the Jordan River Valley looked at one time. In the distant past, God tore this open, and this section dropped down in the Jordan River Valley. This side would be Israel today. This side over here would be Jordan. After he got it spread apart like this, and the Jordan River Valley dropped down, it has the Jordan River sitting on top of it now. God took these two pieces of the earth's crust, the tectonic plate over here, which is Israel is on, and he pushed them together with unbelievable pressure. It caused little flexures to develop over here that you see in orange. These are normal faults. The magma's down here. These faults on both sides of the Jordan River Valley go down to it. But you can see these flexures don't. Well, over the years, a lot of erosion and different things have happened. And now there's one major fault in there that you can see on either side of the Jordan River Valley. And there's one normal fault that's very noticeable that you see here in orange. And it goes all the way from Geba down through the city of Jerusalem and finally ends up at a place called Rimmon, which we'll be looking at in a few minutes. And I took Kenneth and the others down there, and we looked at it while I was down there. Now, this comes out of a standard geological textbook. I just want you to see how very common and ordinary these things are. It's not common and ordinary that God has told you he's going to do something in a particular place. And it's not common and ordinary that this type of fault exists there. Because when these scriptures were written by the prophets and by John in Revelation, they had no idea what a fault was. No idea whatsoever. But God put them there, and we have since discovered them as man has run to and fro across the earth. The type that runs from Geba to Rimmon is this type. It's a normal fault. And this is what's called a fault scarp or a fault plain. Whenever an earthquake occurs near that, one section drops down, another section's lifted up. Notice they even show a spring going out from this because that's quite common whenever you have one section of the land lifted up and another fall down. This is, again, a normal fault. This would be the fault scarp or the fault plain. This is the section that dropped down. This is the section that's lifted up. And here again is a normal fault. And this shows what happens. At first, you don't have anything there. They're just normal rock layers. Then all of a sudden, an earthquake occurs, and it begins to drop down. One section drops down. The other section lifts up. And eventually, you start to have dendritic patterns of water going through it. Now, if the earth were just left alone, and the mountains all stayed where they are now, nothing was lifted, nothing dropped down, and you had this kind of a situation, this is what would happen over a very long period of time. As the water would come down on the land, it would eventually erode it away. Now, at one time, this fault line right here was just like this. And all of a sudden, one section fell down, the other one's lifted up. This is like the one out in Utah. This section dropped down, this section lifted straight up, and that was the exposed fault scarp. I'm going to show you one of these that lifted up dramatically in the distant past, and I'm going to show you how it looks today after all that rain has fallen on it and worn out these gullies that are called dendritic patterns. This is the same fault. The water has fallen on it, formed these gullies, but you can tell that it used to be like this because it has what are known as triangular facets. You'll see the triangular facets in the actual photograph of the Wabash range that I'm going to show you in a few moments. That's the early mature stage. If the rain keeps falling on it and it doesn't lift up anymore, eventually all this will erode away, and finally you'll just be left with what it was to start with, an old flat thing. Because water has a way of eroding the land away, transferring the surface of one mountain to another area. This is a fault rock range, a mountain range produced by normal faulting, the mountain being the uplifted fault block. It's called Maple Mountain and the Wasatch Mountains of Utah. Now you can look and see these small triangular ends of each spur, which are the remnants of the original fault plain. This is a triangular spur, this is a triangular spur. And if you go along through here, you can see these triangular spurs. Of course, they're not clear as they used to be, but at one time, this was just a flat bluff, didn't have these dendritic patterns. At one time, it looked like the San Andreas Fault does here in California. This is the San Andreas Fault Zone. This line runs right through here. All of a sudden, tremendous uplifting occurred, tremendous upheaval in the crust of the earth. And this one section back here at one time, believe it or not, was level with this down here. All of a sudden, this tremendous upheaval in the crust of the earth occurred, and this whole section was lifted straight up in the air. Since then, the rain on it has eroded it away. God's going to do the same thing in Israel. Now, this is Zechariah 14:10. Remember, back in Zechariah 14:5 and 6, God has just split the Mount of Olives into two sections. The whole central fault has dropped down. This will be during that time period from the first earthquake that begins the tribulation period, the last 3.5 years, which occurs in Revelation 6:12. And between that time and the last earthquake, which occurs on the pouring out of the last vial, which is Revelation 16:18, at least the earthquake itself, there'll be a lot of earthquakes. I think all of them together will work to produce this. This whole section here, along this fault from Juba to Rimmon, will be lifted up into a plain. The top of it will be fairly level. This section will drop down. It will be level. But it will be lifted up. Zechariah 14:10. All the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. They said Rimmon south of Jerusalem because there was one to the northwest of Jerusalem, and they wanted to make sure that you knew which one it was, the one to the south of Jerusalem. And it shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place from Benjamin's gate into the place of the first gate of the corner of the unto the corner gate, and from the tower of Hananiah to the king's wine presses. We're going to be taking a look at this a little closer in a moment. But on this section, it says, and men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. Once all this pressure and tension is released in the earth, and all the earthquakes and all the different phenomena that cause them, which are actual being held back in one place, these plates are tightly packed together. All this tremendous upheaval is going to relieve that pressure and tension. And for 1,000 years on the earth, you're going to have very few earthquakes of any more than just light. I doubt if you'd even have a moderate one. Now, this is one that occurred during an earthquake in Alaska. The earthquake was off the shore of Alaska, and this normal fault was inland. And you can see that at one time, this section down here, where you see the trees submerge, was up here. The great earthquake occurred. This dropped down. This lifted up. This is the fault scar. So God has been doing this all over the earth countless numbers of times, thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Now I'm going to show you the same type of a situation in Alaska that occurred at the same time this normal fault collapsed. And I'm going to show you one that's a little more dramatic and dramatic at Anchorage. This is an aerial photograph. The white is snow. You're flying over it and they're photographing it. You can see all these houses. You can see there's some damage down close to this line. Not a whole lot back here, but some. And you can see right here that it just collapsed. That's not seawater. At one time, all of this, looked just like this. And the houses were setting on it, and it was snow-covered just like this. But when the 1964 Alaska earthquake occurred offshore, all of this in here dropped straight down. You can even see some of the houses, some of the tops down in here, and all this debris. Now, we're going to take a look at this flying in from about a 45-degree angle coming in at it like this. And you'll see this fault scarp right through here where it collapsed. God's done this many, many times, but never has he told us specifically where he's going to do it. This that you look down on up here, you saw the houses, you saw the snow. We're coming in at a 45-degree angle. There's the fault scarp that you saw right there. And this is all the debris and the mess that you look down on, and there are some of the houses you can see that collapse. That's the fault scarp. That's the normal fault. That's the same thing that's going to happen in Israel from Geba to Rimmon when the critical spreading pressure is reached right here, and this great earthquake begins the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. I hope you'll forgive my repeating a lot of this, because one of the things that I've had people tell me, they say, well, Brother McElmurray, you're so familiar with all this, you just kind of scan over it. So forgive me if I use too much repetition. But this is a line from Gebert Reiman. Over here is where the great earthquake's going to occur. Everything behind my hand here, under my hand, everything back here, is going to lift straight up. Everything over here in front of it will collapse slightly. That collapsing is going to contribute to the waters of the out of the Temple Mount. It will come off the Temple Mount to go through the Mount of Olives. Now let's take a look at the scripture itself, and let's take a look at it considering all these places at the time it was written. Who was Zechariah? Zechariah was one of the prophets, one of the latter prophets, one of the minor prophets. He prophesied at the same time as Haggai. When did Haggai and Zechariah prophesy? You remember when Zerubbabel, the governor, and Ezra and Nehemiah brought all the nation of Israel back from Babylonian captivity, and they began to rebuild the wreckage of the old temple. Solomon's temple had been destroyed. The city had been destroyed. They began to rebuild it. Zechariah was a prophet who lived in that time. And so he uses figures here, names of places, Benjamin's Gate, so forth and so on, Tower of Hananel. And we have to look back and see where they were if we're going together. Which section is going to be lifted up? Which section is going to fall down? Now notice he said, the land shall be turned as a plain, leveled off on the top, from Gibeon Reman, south of Jerusalem, and where it's leveled off on the top, it shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place. Now he mentions Benjamin's Gate to the place of the first gate. Now, apparently the first gate was not rebuilt, because he refers to the place where the first gate used to be, and unto the corner gate, which apparently was, and from the Tower of Hananel unto the king's wine presses. Now, we know exactly where two of these were because they've been earthed archaeologically. Three of the others, we can make an accurate assessment that we know is right within a certain area. We know exactly where the Tower of Hananel was located. That's exactly where the Gebert Reiman line comes in, right through here like this. Benjamin's Gate may have been here, or it may have been over here. We're not sure. But it had to be somewhere in here. The corner gate may have been here, or it may have been down in here. It has to be somewhere in here, but we're not quite sure where. The first gate, the place of the first gate, could be anywhere from here all the way down to here. But we know it was somewhere in there. Now, he shows you places on here, which is the most likely place. But I've shown you where it had to be within limits. We've unearthed the Tower of Hananel. We know exactly where it was. We know exactly where the king's wine presses were. Now, the line from Gebert Reiman, you can see it coming into Jerusalem at the in the back of the bus terminal at Jeremiah's Cave. And Jeremiah's Cave runs right across here. They've carted down in here. And right here, you can see it underneath where the Tower of Hananel used to sit. And I'll show it to you in a minute. Then it runs right down here behind the temple. Here's the temple. This section right here behind it, going right down through here. Jerusalem just lifts straight up in the air here. See, this is already lifted up in the past two or three times. But this time it's going to be a massive lifting up, and a spring's going to come forth on the Temple Mount. It goes all the way down through here, down the Tyropian Valley, and comes right across through here to the king's wine presses. So I know that I can tell you for sure, when it says all the land shall be lifted as a plain from Gebert Reiman, I can tell you for sure that everything from right here down to right here, Tower of Hananel, the king's wine presses, everything back over here on this side, all this is going to be lifted up back here. All this over here is going to fall down, including the old Temple Mount itself, and a spring is going to come down on it, according to what the Lord said in the book of Zechariah. And he's the only one who could have known that fault was there. Zechariah, Haggai, Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Zephaniah, Amos, Joel, they didn't know anything about fault. They didn't understand how they functioned. That discipline hadn't even been developed. But God said, told Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Now we can see where these faults are. But God has always known they were there, because he put them there. And he's going to use them to fulfill his own prophecy for his own power, by his own power. Now this was the Tower of Hananiah right here. This was the king's wine presses right here. And this is where the fault goes right down through here. Everything back here in the upper city will be lifted up. This is the Temple Mount here. Everything over here will fall down. And a spring is going to come forth on the Temple Mount right about here. Now, I want to take a look at the Tower of Hananiah. Now, the Tower of Hananiah isn't there anymore. It's just the earthworks from it. But we're going to take a look from across the street here. Over here is a bus place, a Jewish bus terminal. And we're going to be over here, and we're going to look over here. And we're going to look at this wall that you see here in green. That's the wall of Solomon the Magnificent. And I'm going to show you that fault that runs underneath, that it's underneath that wall in the rock strata that goes all the way down through the city. I'm very thankful that it's there so that you can see it and I don't have to dig down into the earth. This is it right here. Tower of Hananiah will sit right about up in here. And this is the fault that runs all the way down behind the Temple Mount. I'm going to give you a little closer look at it because that's from a distance. This is from up close. This starts off at the bottom, goes right on up through here, goes right on up through here. And you can actually see the fault extending on up, and I'll show you even more of it in a minute. You can see at one time this piece of the rock was attached to this piece of the rock. They were both one. An earthquake occurred in the past. This dropped down. This lifted up. It's going to be an even more dramatic thing involving quite a few feet when it happens. This is Imogene down here holding a recorder up. Boy, wasn't it fun being young, Imogene? Wasn't it fun? What? You could hold, you held your hand up there a long time. We couldn't do that now. And I was standing up here and I was showing people this fault. Fault runs right up through here. You can see it going right on up through there. This is a big rock that was once attached to this one. It goes all the way up and it runs in that rock strata. You can, if you could walk through the rock, you just keep walking south and it would go right in behind the Temple Mount. Now, this is the Wailing Wall, and this is where the Jews come to worship. The women worship over here. The men worship over here. That practice continued in our churches for a very long time, in some of our churches. I know it was still a practice in the church when I was a boy. The women sat on one side, the men sat on the other. And this is the Wailing Wall. Now, if you put your back to this, you can see how level this is. If you were to put your back to this like I am and look straight ahead, after you went about 30 yards, it just goes straight up. That's the bluff. That's the exposed fault scarp. And I've got some pictures of that, but I don't have them in this series for some reason. But I'll show you where it is, actually. Now, let's see. Let's turn this thing. Oh, get some light up here. That's the way it is right there. This is the Chain of Solomon. Little arc over it, they call it the Chain of Solomon. This is the Dome of the Rock. Down here is the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Right up here is where the temple once sat. Now I have a reason for saying that. Right here is a little place called, it's a little cupola, a little covered place. They call it the Dome of the Spirits or the Dome of the Tablets. Now that name goes back in antiquity for a very long time. We don't know who originally named it that. But that is where the Spirit of God was supposed to dwell, in the Holy of Holies. And it's where the two tablets of stone resided in the Temple of Solomon. that the Ten Commandments were brought down on. If you draw a line straight from that little cocula, it goes right on out and hits the triumphant entry gate, which is the golden gate, which was called the Susa gate in Christ's time. And the temple set here. The Dome of the Rock does not set where the temple set. Now let's get back to this Geba to Rimmon line. This is the Geba to Rimmon line. Notice how flat this is here. Notice how it starts to rise up all of a sudden. You can't see it too well. But if you go over there and start, see these steps here? These are a long flight of stairs. You start going up these steps and then it just goes straight up. This section back to the west of this line is going to be lifted straight up in the air. And this whole section here is going to drop down even further. I don't think it'll drop down a great deal, but I do think it'll probably be lifted up maybe as much as 80 feet, maybe even higher. Now, this is the Dome of the Rock. And if you go all the way up here, you still won't find the Golden Gate until you get here. Because the temple did not set where the Dome of the Rock stands. People swear up and down it did. The guides would take you over there, but the Jewish ones don't. It set here. This little cocula was known as the Dome of the Spirit or the Dome of the Tablets. And it lined up with the Golden Gate, which was the Susa Gate, which was the gate to which Christ made his triumphant entry. It makes a great deal of difference because you don't have to tear down the Dome of the Rock to build a temple. But in all honesty, I do not believe that the temple will be rebuilt until Jesus returns. Now let's take a look at this. This is north. This is south. This is east. Over here is the Mount of Olives. This is west. Now, a lot of preachers teach that the Dome of the Rock is built where the temple sits. It is not. I have been down under the Dome of the Rock. I've been down under it, and all that's down there is a little small room that is, it might be as large, if you drew a line from that door right across here, over to there, that section back there, it might be that large, just to the baptistry. Not beyond the baptistry, or not including the baptistry, but just to the baptistry. I really don't think it's that large. Now, underneath Herod's temple, there was a very large cavern. And we know that because after Herod began to build the temple, he made it so heavy it started to sink, and they had to get in there and shore it up. And it does matter where the temple was built, because everybody says that the Dome of the Rock has to be destroyed to build a temple. That isn't true. But they say that the temple is definitely going to be rebuilt before the Lord comes. I don't believe that. So let's take a look at why I know the temple had to set up here. Right here is the Golden Gate. The Golden Gate was built by Queen Eudoxia in the 5th century. Some say maybe the 6th century. The Wall of Suleiman the Magnificent was built in 1531 to 1535. Almost 1,000 years after the dome, after the Golden Gate. Now this is important because you see the Susa Gate, the remnants of it, were still there when they built this, when Eudoxia built it. So they built it over the Susa Gate. We know that the Susa Gate is under here. Now, the high priest had to look across from the Mount of Olives, look in through the court of the women, look in through the court of the Israelites, look in through the door that led into the holy place, and he had to be able to do that when he offered the offering of the red heifer. And so this gate, he had to look over it, and the Dome of the Rock is way down here. So the Dome of the Rock was put there by a bunch of Islamics who didn't know where the temple sits. They had no idea where it sits. So they put it here in the center of the conclave, but the actual temple was up here. Here's a little cocula called the Dome of the Spirits, the Dome of the Tablets. Here's the Golden Gate that sets over the Susa Gate, and they line up perfectly. So I'm going through all this very carefully because you'll have people tell you that it's set there. that the Dome of the Rock set where the temple did. And it makes a great deal of difference because it affects a lot of different prophecies. Now, here's the Dome of the Rock right here. You come straight out of here and go over into the Garden of Gethsemane. But the Garden of Gethsemane is also up here. And actually, the garden is up here. It's not down here, but they have made it extend down here. But the Garden of Gethsemane is up here. This is the Golden Gate, built over the Susa Gate, through which Jesus made his triumphant entry and went on up into the temple. This is the little cupola right back here underneath these two stars. You can see that the cupola and the Golden Gate line up perfectly. The temple set here. It's completely destroyed, leveled. Now, the Dome of the Rock sits here, but it does not sit where the temple sits. Now, you've probably heard a whole lot about the old expression, holy cow. Well, that may come from the fact that there was a holy cow in Israel. Whenever they would run out of the previous red heifer powder, they would offer another one. And sometimes it was a very long time before they between offering. But when they did offer a red heifer, I believe she could not have more than two white hairs found on her entire body. It may be one, two, or three, I can't remember for sure, but not more than three white hairs could be found. And they would take this red heifer, which I contend was red because it pictured the blood of Christ, although they didn't know that. And they would take her and they would burn her and burn her and burn her and burn her and burn her. Then burn her some more, all of her, bones, everything. Burn, 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 and then burn, 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 burn. Until all that was left was a very fine powder. She had to be offered on the Mount of Olives. And when the high priest killed her, when they performed the slaying, the letting of the blood, he had to be looking over the Susa Gate, which is what the Golden Gate is built over now, and he had to be able to look across to the court of the women, through the court of the Israelites, and then into the holy place, not the Holy of Holies, but into the holy place. So the temple had to sit there, and sometimes if I have more time, I'll tell you about that offering because it's a very interesting offering. Now let's see. This is the El-Aqsa Mosque, there's Solomon's Chain, there's the Dome of the Rock, there's your Golden Gate, here's your Mount of Olives, and he offered her right here. He offered the red heifer right here. He had to be able to look across the top of the Golden Gate, at that time the Susa Gate. He had to be able to look right straight into the court of the women, which was the first compartment in the temple complex, and then into the court of the Israelites, where the altar was inside the temple complex, and then into the temple itself in the holy place. That's why this Dome of the Rock is an abomination. It cannot possibly be where the temple itself sat. Here's the Dome of the Rock here, and you don't see any gate here. It's way on up here, and the little cupola is back here. This is the cupola in large scale. And right underneath here, down underneath it, is the actual bedrock of the Temple Mount. These are little platelets that were put there by the Arabs. But underneath this little cupola is the actual limestone rock of the temple itself. It's been beveled, it's been smoothed in the distant past. And I believe this is where the Ark of the Covenant sat. I think the Ark of the Covenant sat here, the place where the high priest had to go back into the Holy of Holies, the small compartment in the back, and he had to sprinkle blood on the Ark of the Covenant. And he only went in there twice. He only went in there once a year. He went in twice on the Day of Atonement, once in all white garments, and once in the regular garment of the priesthood. So this right here is the best picture I've got of looking across that. It's setting where the old Susa Gate once set. If you were on the Mount of Olives, you had to look over the top of this. And this little cupola back here is where the Holy of Holies set. And you had to look over this all the way to where you could see into the holy place, but not the Holy of Holies. There was a great curtain there. And that could not have been if the Dome of the Rock is in the correct location. This is the Golden Gate of today. And I took a picture as it used to be when I went over there when I was a young man. At that time, you didn't have any fence around it. And it looked just like this. They had some really heavy rain. Oh, if you want to know why this was boarded up, this used to be two entrances you could walk through. But in World War I, because they were afraid that General Pershing, not General Pershing, but, what in the world is that general's name? Allenby. General Allenby, the British general, would bring some armor in here, and they would have armored tanks or armored vehicles, and they would jam their way through this opening. So they closed them up, so they couldn't go through it in World War I. Now, down underneath here, we didn't know what was down there. We thought the Susa Gate was down there, but we weren't sure. So I remember one year before I went over to Israel, they had some extremely heavy rain, heaviest they've had in centuries. And it just poured and poured and poured, and all of a sudden this section collapsed in. And when it collapsed in, we were fortunate enough to actually see what was underneath it before the Arabs could get it patched back up. All of a sudden, this part in here collapsed. And there was a tomb here. It had 25 bodies in it. 25 old sets of dead bones. Apparently there had been some type of a mass execution. And they had thrown the bodies in this tomb. But right here in the bottom of the tomb, when it sank down, you could see in here, and you could see the top of the old Susa Gate. Now, in archaeology, there are some things that are questionable. But in this one, this is a Herodian arch. And being a Herodian arch, it had to be the old Susa Gate. So we know that's where it once stood. All this is important because it plays heavily in prophecy. Now, if you went over on the other side of the Golden Gate, and you remember where we were on the Temple Mount, now I'm standing with my back to that little cupola. It's way back behind me. And I'm looking east toward the Mount of Olives, which is over here. See that tower? That's St. George's Tower. And I'm looking at the back of the Golden Gate. This right here is where it's barred up inside. But this is the back of the Golden Gate, and what it aligns up with is extremely important. So when this great earthquake occurs, because of the lock fault suddenly ripping open, you're going to have all the land lifted from Geba to Rimmon back here, just like you find in all textbooks. Now, next Wednesday night, I'll be down in eastern Arkansas. But the Wednesday night after that, we're going to talk about this spring that's going to pop out on the Temple Mount where this is lifted up. I'm going to show you where the water is, how it got there, where it is now, and what's going to cause it to suddenly pop up on the Temple Mount. The Jews have been looking for this for a very long time. They want that spring to come up, and they used to try to get explorers in that area to give them any clue they could as to where and when it might pop up. And so next Wednesday night after next, I'll be talking about that. A lot of the things the Lord said had to do with living water. And living water, to an Israelite, was water that flowed continuously 365 1/4 days a year. There were a lot of wadis in Israel, dry creek beds that only ran during the rainy season. A lot of people that believe you can lose your salvation, I guess to them it's a lot like a wadi. It only runs and flows when they get on spiritual high. And when they think they can do certain remarkable things, speak in tongues and do all sorts of exciting things, they like that kind of water. It's exciting. But after a while, it tends to dry up. The Lord used springs in Israel that flowed 365 1/4 days a year to typify the kind of life to give. It's eternal life. It flows forever. The Lord indicated once you received it, it would flow out of your belly forever. And I'm very thankful for that water. I'm very thankful that the Lord gave it to me. All of us ought to be extremely thankful for it, because it really teaches us what grace is. To have a living spring in us that flows forever and ever and ever, And it's not dependent upon our individual day-by-day conduct. Oh, it flows faster and more freely. And it's a whole lot more enjoyable if you're in fellowship with it. But it never dries up. Christ never goes away. And he said he was the living water of life. And indeed he is. So, Brother John Mills, would you dismiss us?